Good morning and welcome to Words Out Loud, a fortnightly program designed for readers and writers who live in the northern areas. There will be local news, writers' tips, and a chance for you to be involved as well with our five-word challenge. I'm Joanne Baker. Let me introduce today's panel. We have poet, published author, and president of Adelaide Plains Poet, Carolyn Corden.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome, Carolyn. And our special panelist today, writer of Victorian mystery, steampunk, fantasy, and mysteries, our guest today is Karen Carlisle. Welcome, Karen.
Hello, Joe. Hello, Carol.
First up, let's hear what's been happening in the writer's world in the last fortnight.
Well, Adelaide Plains Poets have been having their usual chapter and verse meeting, which happens every Thursday. Just begun doing critiques of work. So bring in your work and people take them home and critique and bring it back next week. It's wonderful.
Critiquing, I think, is one of the most important things you can do with your own work.
Yep.
I've written good poetry and have had constructive critique that has made it beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what critique is about. It's to make your work better.
That's what we do in our writers group. Spec, fic, chic. It's not an easy one to say.
No, it's not, is it?
We only have about three or four members and we actually do in-depth critiquing, and I've just finished doing structural edits on a friend's book, S.M. Kemet, book out in November-ish.
We'll have to have her on the show.
A guest at some stage for sure.
I always love new guests. You know that. Critique, it can take something that is average and make it good.
Editing.
It can take something good and make it brilliant.
Editing is important.
Absolutely. And you can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You, as a writer, you write something and it's too close. It's just way too close to you to see it.
Exactly.
I went to Friendly Street for my second time. And in the past, I'd been told not to go to Friendly Street because they would not appreciate my writing. And I think that entire vanguard is gone. Because
now they are friendly.
They are incredibly
Yay.
Friendly,
That's
incredibly
good.
Welcoming, and I thoroughly enjoyed performing there.
There's some lovely people going. It's just too far for me, but lovely people going there, and you're one of them, Joe.
But honestly, it's they say it's the longest running poetry group in the Southern Hemisphere.
It's very impressive list of
which
writers.
Is,
They've had some great poets.
Absolutely.
And they still have some fantastic poets.
But like
you.
Everything else, it runs on volunteers.
Yep.
Like we do here at PBAFM,
yep.
We run on volunteers. It's about the passion of people that are involved. So, yeah, if you like writing or if you like radio, get involved. It's easy.
Do something. Join a group. Be involved.
You can't complain unless you're involved.
Just
step up. And you can speak out.
Yep.
Writer's got to write.
A writer's got to write. A speaker's got to speak. And speaking of speakers, what have you been up to, Karen?
I've been doing lots of research.
Oh, my dog, no.
I like research. I rang up SA Museum because I'm doing some research for my next book I'm writing, which is the second Aunt Enid book. And they did an exhibition on Arthur Conan Doyle in 2013. And since he's in my next book, I asked them, and lovely Linda at the SA Museum, I'm plugging the SA Museum, sent me some stuff. They sent me a whole heap of stuff, and I've also been doing Liptember.
Ah, tell us about Liptember.
Liptember it helps support mental health and research in mental health. It concentrates more on women's mental health because we've got Movember in November,
yep.
And most women don't want to grow a mo, so we wear lipstick in Liptember.
I don't know,
instead.
I think mine's just kind of striking.
So I've been doing that, and I'm raising money for that as well.
After the break, we'll have the tip of the day with Connie Berg.
If you're an adult who has difficulties with reading, writing or spelling, the Reading Writing Hotline has some very good news. It can actually be easier to take the plunge and improve your reading and writing skills than to keep putting it off. Phone the Reading Writing Hotline and find out how. Their number is 1300 655 06. That's the Reading Writing Hotline, and they're there to help.
1300 655 06.
Go on, take the plunge.
Welcome to Words Out Loud. This is Connie Berg. Today we're going to talk about symbolism. Symbolism is the use of symbols to signify ideas and qualities by giving them symbolic meanings that differ from their literal sense. Symbolism can take many different forms. Generally, it's an object representing another to give it an entirely different meaning that is much deeper and more significant. Sometimes, however, an action, an event, or a word spoken by someone may also have symbolic value. Symbols shift their meanings depending on the context they're used in. A chain, for example, may stand for union, as well as imprisonment. Thus, symbolic meaning of an object or an action is understood by when, where, and how it is used, and it also depends on who's reading them. In daily life, you can identify objects which can be taken as an example of a symbol, such as the dove is a symbol of peace, and a red rose or the red color stands for love or romance. But be careful how you use your symbolism. It can differ in culture and time and setting. In some cultures, black is the symbol that represents evil or death, but in other cultures, it can be white. Sarah Teasdale, in her poem Wild Asters, develops a number of symbolisms. In the spring, I asked the daisies if his words were true, and the clever, clear-eyed daisies always knew. Now the fields are brown and barren, bitter autumn blows, and all the stupid asters not one knows. In the above lines, spring and daisies are symbols of youth, brown and barren are symbols of transition from youth to old age. Moreover, bitter autumn symbolizes death. Symbolism gives writers freedom to add levels of meaning to their work. A literal one that is self-evident, and the symbolic one, or ones whose meanings are far more profound than the literal ones. Symbolism evokes interest in readers as they find an opportunity to get an insight into the writer's mind on how he views the world and how he thinks of common objects and actions having broader implications. For Words Out Loud, this is Connie Berg.
I find symbolism is incredibly important in poetry.
Mm.
You know, it's one of those things that you can hint. I mean, the latest poem I wrote called Guilty as Charged, it's part of it was, how do I feel guilty as charged? It was, using the imagery of prosecution to show emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I think symbolism is wonderful and sneaky. It pops in by accident.
Oh, yes.
And you found it in your books?
Oh, yes. I'll do a first draft and I'll go, why have I put that in there? And then you're editing it and you go, oh, that's why I put that in there. Oh, that was clever.
That's what I meant.
Oh. Wow. I love the subconscious.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it?
And sometimes other people find the symbolism that you had no idea was there.
Exactly.
And they go, okay, no, maybe you found that, but I'm not quite sure I feel that myself. But it doesn't matter. The reader brings their own sense into your book, into
absolutely.
Your words.
Absolutely. Well, I found that, especially with poetry, I've had people come up to me afterwards and say, you wrote that for me. You wrote from my mind, and this is what I got from it. Is that what you meant? And
yes.
I'm like, yeah, of course it is. Well, absolutely.
It's like that old saying they talk about where the teacher's teaching about the thing, and they're talking about the blue drapes. And they're coming on all this symbolism stuff. And apparently a child wrote to the author and they said they were just blue drapes because I like blue drapes.
Yeah. And sometimes...
Readers...
Sometimes curtain is just a curtain.
Readers will interpret things differently.
Yeah, and it doesn't
And it
matter.
Depends on their need too.
Yes,
and that's what
sure.
makes it more valid.
It's good. It's great. Yep. Every book's different to everyone.
The writer's quote of the day is from English poet Philip Larkin. And he says... Poetry should begin with emotion in the poet and end with the same emotion in the reader. The poem is simply the instrument of transference.
What a lovely thought.
Hmm.
Cool. If it's well written,
indeed,
poetry,
that's if it is well written, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, bad poetry is bad poetry. Now, today, joining us on our panel is Karen J. Carlisle. Karen is a writer of steampunk, Victorian mysteries and fantasy. Her books include The Adventures of Viola Stewart and Aunt Enid, Protector Extraordinaire. Her short stories have featured in the 2016 Adelaide Fringe Exhibition, A Trail of Tales, and Where's Holmes and Dead Steam anthologies. Karen lives in Adelaide with her family and the ghost of her ancient Devon Rex cat. She always loved dark chocolate and rarely refuses a cup of tea. Your series, tell us all about it.
It's called The Department of Curiosities.
Beautiful.
It's got a beautiful cover.
Thank you. I did the cover.
I thought you might.
Yes, some friends of mine were models.
Well, tell us about
the book.
The beginnings. First. I mean, we should plug all of your books, but finish with this
one. So the first series we've talked about in past was The Adventures of Viola Stewart, and that's a three-book series, and they're actually short stories and novellas. And that started with probably one of my most interesting ones to write was Dr. Jack about Jack the Ripper. And that's a bit more of sort of gaslampy, sort of Frankenstein-y end of steampunk. And the latest series is in the same world, different characters. And this one's a full-length novel, and it's more of a steampunk adventure, so it's a bit lighter.
Did you find it hard to transition between short stories and a novel?
I sort of worked my way up to it. Actually, when I started writing again back in 2012, I decided I was going to enter short story competitions to get practice of writing to a deadline, to learn editing and learn to kill my darlings, and to to do a soft thing into rejection, because you just don't get an answer and that's your rejection, so it's a soft way in. And I actually entered 21 short story competitions that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, everyone says that, and I didn't know. And then someone said, oh, my gosh, that's a lot. And I went, oh, is it? And then I just sort of, then I did longer short stories, and then I did novellas, and sort of, so they just grew. But I actually started Department of Curiosities back in 2012-13, and then put it aside because I went through a bad work thing and I wasn't in the mood for lighthearted adventure. And then I did the darker series.
And it was harder to focus.
Yep. And so I went back and I've edited the whole lot. And when you go back to something you wrote 5-something years ago, gosh, you realise how much you've improved. Oh, it's embarrassing.
You've learned so much, haven't you?
And I'm sitting there going, oh, my gosh. Oh, my stars.
But anyway, every now and then you capture a passage.
And you go, oh, my God, I wrote that.
That. I didn't know that was in me.
So, yeah, so this one's more a lighter story, and it starts off in England, and by the end of the book we're in Australia because I want to write more Australian steampunk books.
Well, why not? Did they travel by a steamboat?
They didn't. They went by airship, dirigible.
Of course they did, yes.
Of course they did.
In very steampunk fashion. It wasn't your normal dirigible. So, yeah, and it got here faster than the ship that they were chasing.
Woohoo, yay.
Woohoo.
What sort of research happens when you write something?
I do lots of research. I actually have always found history interesting. I did a stint in the SCA, which is the medieval reenactments. So I've done the costuming as well.
Oh, you've been to the Gamaraka?
Oh, lots of times, yes.
I love
and
the medieval festival.
When it was Birdwood even. Oh. So I actually like research. In fact, I call it procrastination research.
Ah.
Yes. But what I do is I spoke to the museum recently. So I in my steampunk world, I actually have the real world, and most of the facts are historically accurate, but then I twist some. And I think if you have enough respect for the reader to actually do proper research, when you start twisting the facts, people will believe it and accept it a lot better.
Yep.
So I'm...
Are you making fake news?
No, I'm changing history. It's alternate history.
Oh, alternate like alternate history. Facts.
As long as, people, like them. As long as people know that's what you're giving them, then there's no problem.
You're writing
that's
a
the
story.
Thing with steampunk. In the first one in Jack the Ripper, I actually have been fascinated by the story. It sounds gruesome, doesn't it? And I actually have a friend who's a ripperologist.
Oh,
and there's lots of theories and there's lots of facts. And if you end up with Easter eggs as well. So people who know Jack the Ripper.
Okay, you might need to explain to our listeners what Easter eggs mean.
Easter eggs are these cute little things, little surprises in there that if people know things, they'll go, oh, my gosh, I know that. Or if they've read the previous books, they'll go, oh, I know that. It's a little factoid.
Yep.
Like in The Last Murder of Jack the Ripper, there was a certain – they found these items in the fire in a certain order, and I actually said in the first movie why it was that order. in this one here, what was I doing this one here?
Seems to give more meat to the story.
It makes more fun.
Truth.
It does make it take a lot longer, though, because you have to...
because you know people are going to pull you up on it if you get it wrong.
Well, actually, too, also with because it's set in Victoria in the 19th century, there's enough Victorian reenactors. I actually have made the costumes and I'm from scratch, like from the inside out. I've made corsets. I've done... the whole lot, and you've got to put them on the right way. And if you put in there that she's getting dressed and she gets dressed a certain way and it's wrong, you will never hear the end of it. So
well, you see that I think is a fascinating little adjunct to your story, the fact that you do the costuming. I mean, how much time gets involved in that?
Since I've been writing less. But I've been costuming since, oh gosh, this is going to show my, since 1980.
1899. Yeah,
since 1980. And I've done, I've gone overseas to do research. I used to concentrate on 1500s, so 16th century Florence. Eleanor Toledo, and I've actually been to Florence. I've actually been to the museums. I've actually spoken to people who fix, you know, redo the costumes and everything. I've gotten to see the stitchlers. I've actually used to make those by hand. I've actually done it using correct things. Stitches. This sounds so geeky.
It's wondrous.
And then I've done so with steampunk though. I can do the Victoriana outfits, but it doesn't matter if I put a zip in. Because you don't have to be historically accurate. And I can add a bit of wings if I want to, or I can add this or add that.
Sure.
And it's less, I think since I've started having anxiety issues, it's less restrictive. So that's probably why I like it. And it's a bit more whimsical, so it's fun.
I think it's amazing.
I get excited.
It adds a whole depth, like not just one layer, but like three or four different layers to your stories.
Well, you can actually... because you have Google Maps now, you can actually get maps from the 19th century. Booth did a poverty map, which is how they found out, I think it wasn't hepatitis, it was diphtheria, I think. And that's how they worked out it was coming from the water. And so you can get that map and then you can overlay that on Google Maps and you can actually walk around the streets. And I've done that in my very first book. I actually walked the streets around to see what was around there and then looked up. I know, it's so anal, isn't it?
No, it's so awesome.
So, yeah.
It's amazing. No,
I have fun.
The depth to your stories and the depth to your character all comes out because you've done this research, you've done this, the hard yards. Nobody else has to.
Well, see, for the next one, it's not steampunk. The next one I'm doing is a fae tale, which is the second Aunt Enid one, which is set in modern day, or actually, Aunt Enid initially is set in modern day Adelaide. The second book is set in Adelaide, but I'm not going to say any more about that.
Okay.
But you'll get a hint in a second because I've actually been doing a lot of research into Arthur Conan Doyle, who actually visited Adelaide in September 1920, which a lot of people don't realise. And he actually got invited to go up to Humbug Scrub, which was a sanctuary.
Oh, I know Humbug
then.
Scrub, yeah.
Yep. So that's what I was contacting the SA Museum about, was to find out who went up with him, how they went up. It's just so sad. And, of course, now I'm going to stuff it all up because I'm putting extra people in and other things are going to happen, which may or may not contain fairies.
Well... just, well, the way I look at writing things that involve people that were there at the time is if they're dead, they usually don't complain.
Well, also, actually, technically, I think you can't libel the dead, but you just don't say nasty things about them. You just don't say nasty things.
You don't want to offend relatives.
You don't, especially if it's local. You don't. And they're just because I wanted to get the right names. That's the only reason I was doing it, because I wanted to make sure it was correct before I started mucking it up.
I understand. All right, give us a short overview of your storylines and then tell us how to get them.
Okay, if you start with Viola Stewart, there's three books. The first short story is when she's a little kid and she sees something horrible happen to the Queen. And so in my steampunk books, the both series are actually in the same world. In my world, the Queen has actually restricted gadgets, so I'm what they often call gadget-light steampunk. There's gadgets, but not everyone has it, so you've got to know someone or have the right authority or money or whatever to have
it. Sounds like weapon restrictions.
Sort of, because there's also the Department of Curiosities, which is the next series, and they're a bit like, what's the closest I can think of, Warehouse 13?
Don't know that one.
They collect these gadgets that are illegal and they put them down supposedly to control them or research them, but basically so the public can't get them. And, of course, we come across Tilly, who's our main character.
Who wants them?
No, no, she can't see why people can't have them because they'd make people's life easier.
Easier, yeah.
And so, but she actually gets sort of, conned isn't the right word, entangled for herself with the Queen and has to end up working for the Queen even though she doesn't want to. It's very complicated. But this one, so the first series, there's hints about the Department of Curiosities. They've mentioned a couple of times that they're around. But the first series is more like the first one has Jack the Ripper. The second book has mummies and curses and madness and asylum. Lots of interesting research there that was. I'm sure on my Nazio's watch list for some of the research I had
all
to
the
do.
Best people are, I'm
terrible.
Sure.
There's some very interesting sites I'll tell you about later, but yeah. And the third one was really quite interesting. It was about Illusioneer. It was called The Illusioneer, and it was about Victorian and 19th century illusionists. And I worked out after I finished writing it that the themes was about trust. The whole thing was about trust and who she trusted, and at the end, can she trust someone else to do it, or she doesn't have to do it all herself. And so that's that one. It's a bit more darker. That's terrible English. And then I wrote Aunt Enid, which we'll get to in a second, but the second series, Department of Curiosities, is a full-length novel, and it's more into Tilly has this companion, which is not quite your normal companion. It's actually this orb that hangs around her neck and talks to her telepathically. It's explained. By the end of book three, you will find out what it is. Actually, by the end of book one, I think you find out what it is. And so she accidentally runs into this guy because she's going after something and he's going after something, and she gets introduced to the Department of Curiosities and sort of gets sucked in, well, actually apprenticed to them sort of, and ends up helping them. And they're a sort of secret society that the Queen has, and there's lots of machinations, excuse me.
So it's sort of like the Avengers, but in steampunk version.
Oh, I don't like the Avengers. steampunk has lots of, you often have mad scientists and machinations and secret societies doing nefarious things, and there's
nefarious things are fabulous things.
Yes, because the bad guys are so much fun to write.
But Tilly's working for the good of the Empire.
She's working for the good of the Empire. The Department of Curiosity is for the good of the Empire. But it gets more complicated than that, because the second book's called Against the Empire.
Ooh, okay. She rebels.
I have lots of grey levels. Nothing's black and white. Levels.
Good. It shouldn't be.
It's very nuanced.
So yeah, so that's more nuances that's are good. More of a rollicking thing. It starts in London. By the end of the first book, we're actually in Australia. Mm-hmm. We're going to be in Australia for most of the second book, and I'm actually researching. Weird things happen. Like it turns out that when she's in Australia, the Krakatoa went off. And so I've been doing research in that because that's going to quite conveniently stuffs up telecommunications that they had, which is perfect for my story, which is great. So things like this happen to me a lot. So I'm working on that one. And then I've got Aunt Enid, which is set in modern day Adelaide, and I had so much fun writing that. It's a cozy paranormal mystery because I think I have read way too much Agatha Christie, Naomi Marsh, and Sherlock Holmes when I was a kid. I lived in a diet of that. So I try not to write a mystery, and just about every book I write ends up writing as a mystery. So Aunt Enid is a septuagenarian.
60-year-old.
She's a great auntie, 70.
Seventy-year-old. I'll cut the other.
In fact, her great great niece calls them Miss Marple Brigade at one stage. Oh. But it's a bit more complicated than that, of course. And a lot of stuff in this book is from my childhood. Like I actually have a great aunt Enid, and she actually makes lemon butter. I remember she we used to do that with as kids all the time, with the big metal stove, wood burning stove, and she had hydrangeas out the front. And so I had this thing in my head and I went, oh my gosh, Adelaide has alkaline soil. The hydrangeas will be stuck like that. Oh, I can use it as a litmus thing for something which actually becomes a plot point. Ha ha. And this whole story plopped into my head.
That is so absolutely
and
awesome.
I had so much fun. But yeah, at the end of the next one I'm going to start next is called A Fae Tale. It's a cozy fantasy mystery because it's got fairies.
You just can't stop writing.
Oh, I've got too many. I actually have a list of to write books and I think it's now at 18.
Whoa.
I get too many ideas.
So if people want to get hold of your books, how do they go about it?
Well, you can go to the bookshop and order them because they should be able to order them. You can also get them online. Most of the book places have it, Book Depository and all that sort of stuff. If you prefer ebooks, you can get them on Smashwords or Amazon.
I personally think that the best way to get a book is through the author.
Yes, well, you can get it from me. If you live in Australia, I can post it out to you. And you just go to www.karenjcarlisle.com/shop. And there's a shop there. And you can actually buy the books and music.
And cups.
Mugs. It's all my original artwork. So
you're a multi-talented person.
I just like distracting myself.
She's not just a writer, that's for sure.
Oh, no one's ever just a writer.
Too many things I want to do.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the panel today. After this short break, we'll have your chance to be involved with the five-word challenge. So get your pencil and paper ready.
Do you have a secret vice? Do you have a deep, dark and dire secret? Do you write? Poetry! Yes, PBAFM presents Wellversed, a program of poems to be broadcast during the Salisbury Secret Garden 2019. Head to PBAFM's Facebook page for more details. All poems must be submitted by 31st of October.
Okay, five-word challenge time. We have a bit of a language issue.
Language warning.
A language warning. Thank you, Joe. A language warning.
Beep, beep, beep.
The words are from Deborah May's upcoming book, My Rabid Fucking Soul. And the words were rabid, wolf, cliche, forgotten, and fog. And one of the responses was from Marianne White, and she wrote, "He looked at her, drooling at the mouth like a rabid wolf. She had forgotten that the best thing to do was to ignore this man, well known for ogling women, especially beautiful young women like her. But this morning, she remembered nothing, her mind in a fog. Edgar had taken advantage of her flustered state with a cliché. If I told you you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me?" Erica shuddered in disgust.
Fair enough. That is one of the oldest and most painful ones that I know of.
It's vile.
Karen, please read yours.
Okay. It's a cliche. Thick fog swirls amongst broken buildings. A grey wolf steps forward, bares its teeth, snarls. Its mouth foams, its eyes roll. I run, stumbling into darkness. The rabid wolf howls and slinks off. I'm forgotten.
Aren't you lucky?
Hell yeah.
I'd rather be forgotten by a wolf. Sounds sensible to me. I have one here from Deb Stewart, who's a new contributor. Welcome, Deb. A long-forgotten cliché, lost in the fog of fading memory, weaving silk like the rabid wolf spider to wrap its prey. Read between the lines. All that glitters isn't gold, but a silken thread to trip and trap is all fair in love and war. But don't fret the lost cliché. As old as the hills, as boring as hell, seek the new and original so that all that ends, ends well.
Lovely, Deb. Ooh. Thank you.
Well done,
Looking
Deb.
Looking forward to more from you. Okay, and I have one from Phil Botic from this radio station, and he wrote, "The forgotten cliché of the rabid wolf was lost in the fog."
See, I think Phil and our dear friend Alison Barker have the same sort of mindset. They want to put all of the words into a single sentence.
They're made for small, yes.
And
it's short and sharp.
It's amazing, actually, that they can do it and make it so different. Because this one is the one I've got from Alison. And it is, the cliche about the rabid wolf lies in the earth of the forgotten fog.
Wow, that's really awesome things in just so few words, Alison.
Yep, so Alison and Phil, you guys are horn to horn tackling the beast.
You're not doing huge novels, that's for sure, but it doesn't matter. Your words are
words are powerful.
True. Okay, and I have another one here from Rhea Wells. Thank you, Rhea. Lost in the fog, the wolf was forgotten. A rabid cliche running free to be whatever he wanted to be. Lost in the fog.
How lovely. Hmm. You never wonder if a wolf wants to be a duck. Just a thought. Anyway, I have here from Alex Robinson. Always a wonderful contributor. And his title is Ruling With and Without the Monarchy. Tales of Wolf Hall, cliches of Cromwell, his forgotten father rather than Oliver, a rabid dog at the door, cavaliers and roundheads, after the king's disposal, a fog of leadership, without the monarchy, now seen with Boris, with Brexit from Europe.
He is a very learned man, our Alex.
He certainly is. We love his contributions, and it makes me try to strive to be more thoughtful.
Indeed, and more knowledgeable about historical
deeper
matters.
Deeper than my very superficial level that I love to run upon.
There's different kinds of people, and he is certainly...
He is very deep.
A very learned man. Okay, and now it's time for my contribution to this Fun Times, a poem called No Forgetting Some Things. He was the cliché of a rabid wolf, his mouth a dribbling foam of lust. You were too young then, and so was he, you realise now. You thought you'd forgotten it all, but some things will slip through the fog of years and haunt you, even in wiser, more mature years. Lessons learned, wisdom earned, alcohol's glamour understood, too late now to change the past, but it's filed under forgive and forget.
Beautifully done. Thank you, Carolyn, for sharing that.
You're welcome. I've changed it since then, but you know.
As you do.
It's got a better ending.
We're all allowed to edit.
Yeah, always. That's what writing's all about.
We had 10 minutes and that was it.
All right. The words for the 5-word challenge for this fortnight are from our guest Karen Carlisle's novel.
Department of Curiosities.
And they are pathological, mask, froze, whispered, and discombobulated.
I love that word.
I love that word too. It's an awesome word. I'll give them again.
We had to change some words, but these are better ones than the other
two. Then you picked.
Than I picked. Yeah, thank you, Joe.
You're welcome. I love you. So the words again are pathological, mask, froze, whispered, and discombobulated. Now you can post your responses, give yourself 10 minutes, write out something using those words, and the best way to get in contact with us is post them on our Facebook page, Words Out Loud, or you can email them to wordsoutloud.pba@gmail.com, or if you're a steampunk survivalist and believe in the actual post, you can send them to box 433 Salisbury 5108. Just title it Words Out Loud, we'll get it and we'll read it, and we love having new contributors to the show.
Yes, for sure. New contributors are fun.
They are. It's fascinating to see how people use words.
Yep.
I love it. Coming events.
Coming events. Oh, that's right. I had coming events. Steampunk Festival. Okay, I'm going to be at the Adelaide Steampunk Festival. This is about the seventh one, I think. It's at the National Railways Museum at Port Adelaide, and there's going to be food and all sorts of stuff. But most importantly, there's going to be other authors, including me, in the markets, and artists and comic books, and come and buy our stuff.
Absolutely.
Please.
And there's also little steam trains.
Oh, yeah, there's steam trains, and they will have the trains going on the weekend. And a lot of people take photos and stuff. And you don't have to come in costume or outfits, but if you want
but
to, that's cool.
Fun.
Oh, it's much fun. Yes,
it
come and say
awesome,
hello.
Awesome, because I've seen some pictures of Karen in costume.
Oh, and they're fantastic.
And her front cover of the Department of Curiosities is just fantastic stuff.
We had lots of fun.
And hats and more hats.
Hats off to you, darling. You did well.
Hats, yeah. Great stuff. And, the Adelaide Plains Chapter Verse group will be doing their thing on Thursday coming up and every Thursday after that.
At the PA Hotel.
PA Hotel.
In
4 till 6 in Gawler. Beautiful work.
And the Tea Tree Gully Poetry Festival will begin on October the 19th. Be involved. There are some amazing things happening around the Tea Tree Gully Poetry Festival. The Paddocks Creative Writing Group meets every Wednesday, 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. in Para Hills. The Jack Young Creative Writing Group meets Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. in Salisbury. Northeastern Writers meet every Thursday of each month at 7:30 at the Tea Tree Gully RSL Hall, 18 Memorial Drive, Tea Tree Gully. And please, there are many, many writers groups that we actually don't feature because there's just so many to talk about. Check out Adelaide Poetry Gig Guide on Facebook. That will tell you all
everything,
the regular gigs that are around
yep.
all of South Australia. There is so much talent. Please be involved. You're missing something if you're not. So thank you, Carolyn,
for
being involved in our show today.
I've had a fun time.
And it was an absolute joy to work with you today, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, thank you for listening. Hey.